it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Lauren Berry. Welcome to On Deadline, where we break down top news stories from our radio stations across the country. Now, whether you love him or you hate him, most people would agree on one thing about our president, Donald Trump. He doesn't get a lot of sleep. Flurries of middle-of-the-night social media posts can attest to that. So can the dizzying number of executive orders and other battles with everyone from world leaders to governors to mayors to prosecutors to, well, too many people to mention by name. But is the president, as a man on the cusp of 80 years old, actually working himself to death? Many people were asking that question this week when rumors were swirling around social media claiming that the president was dead. On X, the hashtags Trump is dead and Where is Trump were trending. Millions of people made or watched videos speculating that Trump had either died or suffered a stroke or some other serious medical emergency. But what was this talk based on? Well, it's the fact that he'd gone about 2 days without holding a press conference or appearing in the public eye. When he reappeared Tuesday for a press conference, a Fox News reporter asked the president this: "How did you find out over the weekend that you were dead?" Trump said that he'd heard some rumors, but not ones that went as far as claiming he was dead. "I didn't see that," he said. "I have heard, it's sort of crazy, but last week I did numerous news conferences. All successful, they went very well. Like, this is going very well." Trump did recently reveal that he was diagnosed with a condition called chronic venous insufficiency, which is causing some swelling in his lower legs that, of course, the internet has also commented on. Here's conservative talk host Tara Servatius with the latest on Trump's health and her concerns for it. And note that while she is an avid supporter, she does concede that concerns from both sides of the aisle about Trump's health are legitimate and not just political attacks.
Okay, we have checked. Got an update. Donald Trump is still not dead. Never mind the fact that right now on X, the number one trending thing is hashtag Trump dead. The other two things trending: the White House and Oval Office. They're all over it. This has been trending for almost 24 hours now and really started beginning the weekend. Why? Because the left has no hope. Their only hope is that Trump will pass away and they will be left with soft, pliable Republicans who will capitulate to them, as has happened for many decades. They don't know what to do with a Republican who won't capitulate. And they also know that just about everybody absent Trump will capitulate. We know Mike Johnson will sell out. All you got to do is go boo, and he'll be like, "How much? What do you want?" J.D. Vance used to be very anti-Trump before he was pro-Trump. They think they can bend him to their will. So they're very excited this weekend. And that's what trended all weekend long. What caused this? Where's this coming from? Okay, started with this over the weekend. Rumors of his death, particularly on X. Primary triggers. And Trump had not been seen publicly since a cabinet meeting on Tuesday. Good. I hope he took a break. And no public events scheduled for the Labor Day weekend. That theory led to, well, maybe he's sick. This unusual lack of visibility combined with a blank White House schedule sparked questions about his whereabouts. Of course, they never had any of these questions about Joe Biden, okay? So it starts trending, where is Trump? Trump is dead. Starts trending on X. And by Saturday, it's 158,000 posts. Everybody's very excited on the left that Trump might be dead. Trump, earlier in 25, okay, Trump was diagnosed with chronic venous insufficiency. It's a condition causing swelling lower legs. My dad has a version of it. And it's common in people over 70. But it means, you know, your heart is beginning to struggle, that you are having trouble overcoming the swelling, the bloating, things like that. It is very much, you know, blood pressure circulation related. And you're, I mean, you're over 70, it's not going to be great no matter what you do, right? You can exercise and all that, but Trump's never been in the best shape. And so he had a meeting. This is, you can go back and read about this in the Associated Press. And I checked this out. This is legit, okay? Headline, this is what started it. Trump is checked for lower leg swelling and diagnosed with common condition in older adults. Okay. But they took a look at him. He was sitting there, a big White House confab. And this, you know, started in July, back in August, and the swelling in his ankles is unbelievable. You can see the minor bruising on his hands. Elderly people with this will get that too. And it occurs when the like little valves inside veins that normally help blood, you know, against gravity, flow against gravity, gradually lose the ability to work properly. And if you look at the pictures here, this just, wow. And Trump is at the White House and he's sitting there and they're not wrong about this. It, I mean, you can Google it. This was, I mean, he looks like he's got elephantitis in his ankles. They are really swollen and that is really not good. And I was saying, which has been about a week and a half ago, something like that, Caroline Leavitt, his spokesperson, was bragging that the reporters on the plane were sleeping, and Trump worked a staggering 35 straight hours doing an interview every single hour in that period while the reporters slept, and she was very proud, and, oh, look at him, he can outwork them. And I went, oh, my gosh, please stop. He's got to take a day off. That 35-hour stretch was, you know, remember that he had the summit with Putin and then he had to deal with the Euro weenies. He just didn't sleep. Guy's sleeping like 3-4 hours. He's really just napping. You can't, I'm telling you, you can't do that with this. You can't. He is not well. He's not. Now, I'm not saying he's off like Biden was or senile. I'm saying you can't push your body at 79 like this. This would kill you in your 50s. You keep doing this kind of schedule. So I started talking about that. I said, you know what? We need to start a movement. Trump needs to take a day off. Just one day. No work on Sunday. And people on his staff need to enforce that. Stop it. Take it away. Take the Truth Social away. Take it all away and make him rest. So I was thrilled he didn't have any events over the weekend. But I got to tell you, I was a little worried when I saw it. The left's not wrong on this, except they hope he'll die. I didn't want him to live because, I mean, J.D. Vance, I think, would carry forward a lot of the stuff. I think he's probably a good guy. Does he want to get reelected? But it's not going to be like with Trump. You know it. And by the way, the other thing that got him going was Trump saying he was trying to stop the Ukraine war to do a good thing to make up for all of his, you know, playboy days and sin in the past so he could get into heaven. The left went wild. Oh, cool. He's going to heaven. Bye-bye. You know, so that's all going on. But there are legitimate medical concerns here. It's not great. And he needs to slow down. He has got to start taking a break. You cannot go 7 days a week sleeping 3-4 hours a day at his age. You can't. But I know dealing with his health problems, just listening to him talk about it, he's got to sit down and slow down. My dad does, to be healthy, and Trump isn't doing it. So over the weekend, Caroline Leavitt, who, folks, I was cringing. And I played the audio for you. She was bragging because the New York Times reporters, you know, missed some critical details because they were asleep on the plane. And she's saying, if you'd just been up like Trump. And she said, you know, she's bragging, he's been up for 35 hours. And I was like, oh, dear God, somebody make him go to sleep. He can't keep doing it. He's going to kill himself.
So what's a person to do if they dislike Donald Trump as a person and dispute many of his policies? And then find out that he's not well. Chad Hartman from WCCO in Minneapolis has some words for you.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This isn't a shocker. Anybody who listens to the show, I'm not really a big fan of Donald Trump, the human being, or many of his policies. This second term has turned out to be what he told you it was going to be. It's about bullying. It's about revenge. It's about vengeance. It's not like I'm against all of his policies. That's far from that. But the human being is it's pretty much clear that he's been a bully every aspect of his life. However, the ghoulish excitement about a health issue involving Donald Trump is embarrassing. It's shameful. Do I expect him to tell us the truth in any way about his health? Hell no. Who was the guy in the first time he ran who looked like the college professor who had been partying way too long and claimed to be Trump's doctor? Trump claimed to be the doctor, and it was like he's in the greatest shape ever. And then the guy would later admit that Trump wrote the entire report, right? He paid him or something like that. And then we got Ronny Jackson, who read about Ronny Jackson and the Obama administration and flights and that man's credibility. Didn't he say something like Trump could live until he's 200? I've never met somebody in better shape than Trump.
I believe it.
All that.
Then was it Harold Bornstein?
Harold
was the doctor?
Bornstein, yes, yeah. That's right. Like kind of wild looking, right?
Yeah, got the long hair.
Long hair, yeah. Go, Harold. Then we had, was it about a year ago or when was it when he came out? He was 6'3", 250. 6'3", 215. He's closer to my height. And he's closer to, I don't know, 250? I don't know. His energy, almost all the time, I never question it. How he's using the energy, I question pretty much every time. And so now we've had this strange bruise on his right hand for a while, right? And it seems like they've been sometimes covering it up, sometimes not covering up. It appears he may have been wearing a catheter for a while. The right leg is dragging a little bit. He's 79. Guess what? When you're 70, I think what percentage of people would like to be in the same health as Donald Trump? From what we know, okay? From what we know about Donald Trump at 79 right now. I got a guy who wouldn't take it. That's a man who used to, who's still my father, who's not with us anymore. He was in better shape. He's a rarity. He's Trump at 79 is in better shape, seemingly from energy and pace, than what percentage would you say?
82%.
Yeah, I might even go higher. But they're not ever going to tell us the truth about this guy and his health. Ever.
They're not just, if it's bad news.
No. And even if it's true, I just don't know how much is going to be true. You know, you read some of the accounts, the 20 election, when he developed COVID, maybe even right here at Marty Davis's party, mm-hmm. where he was extraordinarily sick, like scarily sick as the president of the United States.
Are you saying a president's staff would hide the shortcomings of a president's health in any way, Chad?
Yeah. You're stepping on the touchdown call because I'm going to go to the last guy, and they were lying to us too.
They still are.
They're still lying to us. I mean, who knows when Biden really – I use this example often. I've used it in a while, but when – Obama, who had gave the tip of the cap to Clinton over Biden, and then Clinton loses, and now we got a kiss up to Joe, and so it's one of the last days of Obama's presidency, and they invite people behind the scenes who know Biden. He doesn't know. He thinks he's just coming in to nod and whatever, and he awards Joe the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to what we're going to hear today with Rudy Giuliani.
Very similar.
Very similar. You watch that Joe Biden. And then you see Joe Biden in 2020 when he's running, and they're slip. But then you see it from 21, 22, 23, 24. He's just not the same person.
No.
And it's sad. It's sad because age gets to people in different ways. And while I disagree massively with Donald Trump, the person, and many of his policies, I don't want a single thing to happen to his health. I wish he wasn't the president of the United States, but I'm not wishing death upon him. And I get some parts of Twitter are the worst. Some of it is the best. Some of it's funny. Some of it's informative. But if you're a public official and you are legitimately having fun or hopeful in some way of the serious, not joking, health demise of the president of the United States, what the hell is wrong with you? Again, I'm no fan of the guy. I mean, I think he demonstrates himself to be just an awful person on a regular basis, the way he treats people, the demeaning he does. But among the fraudulence about this, Dave, is some of the folks who found the way to joke about it, they were the same ones who either in the media, the new media, or politics, who when you'd ask them about Biden, you know what they'd say? Seems fine to me. Didn't see a problem. Just was with him.
You should see him in those meetings.
You should see him. He's amazing.
He's unbelievable.
He's like Einstein. So Donald Trump's having an announcement soon. If he announces he's stepping down as president, I'd be like, thank you. If he announces he has some illness, that's awful. I wish ill health on murderers, disgusting people. Not a guy who I never would vote for. Not a guy who I think treats people solely how they treat him. That's it. He wakes up every day. How is today going to benefit me? That's what Donald Trump thinks every day. But if you're gleeful about health, or this was your thing this week to come up with, they've shut down Walter Reed, get out of here. Now, it's embarrassing, and I don't know if it's going to end going forward, because nobody can tell us we knew what we should have known about Biden. No one can honestly say. They can say it. They're not right. They're just not telling the truth. And if something is going on with Donald Trump, come on. We'll never know. Outside of another doctor, Dr. Harold Bornstein, or his new assistant, he's greater than ever. He's in the best shape. And what do you want to say about the folks who just were basically hopeful that there was going to be a death announcement?
Yeah, well, we should be better than that, but sadly we're not.
No.
And, I mean, can you imagine what social media is going to be like the day that Trump, Biden, Obama, when one of them passes? I mean, get off social media for a week, because it's just going to be disgusting.
Or, okay, let's say Trump did announce in his press conference that he has some notable health condition. Where we're at now, the number of people who would say, I'm going to step aside from our political differences and I'm going to wish the president the best, where that would have been McCain, Obama, Romney, Obama, Kerry, Bush to now, we can't even see that coming.
Meanwhile, the very clearly alive president has suggested deploying the National Guard to Chicago to help fight crime. But there, the mayor, the police chief, and even the governor of Illinois are opposed to this plan. And people are questioning if it's even legal, though Trump claims that it is. Here, WWL's Newell Norman will discuss an act that generally prohibits the use of federal troops for domestic law enforcement.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
To help us understand more about the possibilities and this use of the military, we asked Colonel Jeff McCausland to join us, CBS military analyst. Colonel, thanks for being here.
By the way, may I say while we're doing this, you know, God bless the great city of New Orleans as we pass through, of course, during this weekend, the 20th anniversary of Katrina, which I covered very closely for CBS back in the day, and where the city is now based on the disaster 20 years ago. Just an amazing testimony to the human spirit, resiliency, and the teamwork of the great city of New Orleans. So God bless all you for that.
Thank you, Colonel. We appreciate that. And I think that's actually a good segue, because 20 years ago today, we were begging for the military come to New Orleans. The city, the state, the region, there were difficulties with the White House and the governor's office, the National Guard and the Pentagon, all trying to determine who would be in charge, who would call the shots, how it would work. And all of that discussion, because it was an unprecedented situation, led to delays. So we wanted, as a community, the military to come and assist New Orleans. Chicago does not want the military. At least the mayor does not. The police chief does not. The governor of Illinois do not. Some of the people may. But how does this process work? Speaking of unprecedented, we saw some national troops deployed to Los Angeles during the riots there. And we have another court ruling today suggesting that was unconstitutional. We've seen the National Guard deployed in Washington, D.C., which is a different set of legal circumstances because it is the nation's capital and not a state. And Congress and the White House have certain powers in D.C. that they don't have elsewhere. But what about Chicago? Is this something that the president, A, has the power to do, and B, is there precedent for it?
You know, it's a great segue back to Katrina, because during Katrina, one of the most amazing things, which people may have forgotten, was where was Louisiana National Guard when Katrina hit? And the answer is one of the missions of the National Guard. The vast majority of the Louisiana National Guard was in Baghdad. They were deployed in Baghdad. There were very few National Guardsmen left in the state of Louisiana. And so as a consequence, one of the things that occurred was agreements were then signed between the various states, which allowed the governor of Pennsylvania to actually call up his guard and pass him over to the governor of the great state of Louisiana. But that was for a second mission, and that's the mission of the National Guard, which is disaster recovery. And we've seen that frequently throughout our history, where the National Guard is called up for natural disasters, whether forest fires in California or floods and hurricanes in the Gulf Coast. And then the third mission of the Guard, beyond Baghdad and beyond that disaster release, is social unrest. We have large-scale social unrest. So think of the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, or think of if you're an old man like me, you can remember Vietnam and some of the disastrous things that occurred with the National Guard being called up in places like Kent State. Okay, but those are the missions: overseas reinforcement of national security interests, Baghdad, humanitarian disasters, Katrina, or massive social unrest. And Mr. Trump is stretching that particular law pretty dramatically now, and saying, well, I'm going to go in and police American cities, okay, because we don't have massive social unrest, and we don't have humanitarian disaster in the city of Chicago. And you're right again that Washington, D.C. is different, because of the Home Rules Law passed by Congress, the president has more direct authority over the Washington, D.C. National Guard than he does another. But the problem is, and it's come out already now, that under the law, the National Guard cannot be used, or federal troops cannot be used, called up by the government for law enforcement. An individual governor could. The governor of Louisiana, the governor of Illinois could call up the Guard and use them for law enforcement. And in fact, again, back to Katrina, many people don't realize the vast majority of the National Guard, when they arrived, were called up again, by governors, and therefore were under the control of the adjutant general of the great state of Louisiana, and not under the control of the federal military and General Honoré, who was down there. A very small number of actually federal forces were under Honoré's command, a lot of Coast Guard because of air operations and sea operations, but the ground troops were under the command of the Guard because and the governor because they could do law enforcement in that particular case. But when called up by the president, can't do law enforcement. And now, as Mr. Trump is planning this, apparently, two curious things have happened. One, according to Governor Pritzker of the great state of Illinois, he hasn't spoken to Pritzker about what his plan is, number one. And number two, we've now had a court finding in the last few hours, I think, of a court in California, whereby the California governor actually went to court saying what Mr. Trump had done, calling up the Guard and federalizing him and deploying him to the streets of Los Angeles, was contrary to the Posse Comitatus Act, which was passed by Congress in the 19th century, precluding the use of federal forces for law enforcement. Because when called up by the president, that National Guard now is federalized and becomes part of the federal force.
So short of, in your analysis, short of Congress changing the law or a contrary ruling from the United States Supreme Court, ultimately, the National Guard cannot be used in the way that the president wants to use them in Chicago, even if it's to enforce immigration laws or other laws that is not under the purview of the president as the law is written now.
Exactly. That would be my interpretation. But, you know, I'm a non-lawyer, oh, by the way. But that's right now the opinion of the court. To use National Guardsmen who have been federalized, that's a very important thing. They've been federalized. The president cannot use them for law enforcement. Now, if Pritzker was to call up National Guardsmen and put them on the streets of the city of Chicago for law enforcement under his authority as a governor, different equation, because now they're under the governor's authority and not under federal authority.
Colonel, where do you see this headed?
I see it headed to the courts. I see it headed to the courts, and that's where it's going to go for sure. The real question, of course, is there also now going to be a showdown between Pritzker and Mr. Trump. And I think it's also important to keep in mind, my interpretation, again, is this is part of Mr. Trump's larger effort, supported by a number of people around him, what's called the unitary theory of the presidency. And there was a lot of discussion prior to his election and in the aftermath by various very conservative think tanks that said, you know, we're not reading the Constitution correctly. There's a part of Article 2 of the Constitution really gives the president a lot more power than the president has ever exercised. And Mr. Trump is exercising that in a number of ways, and if you will, pushing out the bounds of his authority. This is only one. The declaring of all these tariffs, for example, which also is a second very important court case, is the second one where he has declared, well, it's a national emergency. So therefore, I, as president, can, at my own authority, put a 50% tariff on India and basically do whatever I want to and change it tomorrow if I'd like. Whereas most people would say, if you read the law, that's really the responsibility of Congress. And the unitary theory of the presidency, which they argue, basically says that there is no real checks and balances between the three branches of the government. There's the president who is supreme, supported by those other two branches. And that, I think, is also being called to question here by this particular action.
I guess we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out in the courts. And Congress, of course, can change the laws if the president can convince them to do so and make them more amenable to what he's trying to accomplish. Colonel, I know you got to run. We appreciate your joining us and sharing your time with us here on WWL. Thank you for your kind words and for your analysis.
KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow has more.
How has that deployment in D.C. been going?
You know, it's curious because, you know, people say, I mean, the National Guard, they're really just in tourist areas. I've been downtown, you know, a lot lately. I've seen very little presence, but starting today, they're carrying weapons. And, you know, that scares people. You know, the locals are not happy with these folks here. Mostly they seem to have been helping police go after, and to sound ridiculous, but people on mopeds, mostly delivery people who are delivering food, a high percentage of whom are immigrants, some of whom are undocumented. So they're using this as an immigration tool. Trump says crime has gone way, way down in D.C. There are no statistics really to back that up. up. So people are scratching their heads. There are confrontations with protesters, and it leads to questions. I mean, Chicago, the Washington Post reported, is next in September. Trump expects to send National Guard to Chicago. And in the Oval Office on Friday, he said Chicago, New York, and of course he mentioned one of his least favorite cities, San Francisco. He says, look what Democrats have done in San Francisco. They've made a mess of it. Maybe we'll send in, I can't remember the word he used, but we'll send people there to help clean it up.
I can only imagine the protests if that happens. The governor of Maryland was on Face the Nation over the weekend, and he actually, I guess, sent a letter inviting the president for a public safety walk to actually see what's going on. I don't know if that's going to be taken up or not.
No, the president already said, forget that. He said, you know, you clean up your city before I, you know, that it's a, I can't remember, he uses the word rats when he talks about Baltimore a lot, but says he has no interest in walking through Baltimore, that the mayor has to clean up the city. There is a reason that there is a, you know, 150-year-old tradition in the United States that the military is not used for law enforcement. The military, and that includes the Pentagon, as well as the National Guard, those are not intended to be, you know, to quell domestic violence. That is typically seen as something that's done in, you know, authoritative states. There are exceptions. The easiest exception is Washington, D.C., but that's because it's a federal city. It is, you know, something that the Constitution put under control of Congress, and as part of the laws that have been written around D.C., the president has full authority to use the National Guard in D.C., which might remind some people, remember the president said that it was Nancy Pelosi who should have called out the National Guard on January 6th during the insurrection. The president was the one with the full authority at that point to call out the National Guard. So he's within his rights in D.C., but to do it in Chicago, let alone San Francisco, he needs to declare, either the governor has to ask for help, and that certainly is nothing that Governor Pritzker or Governor Newsom are doing, or the president has to declare an emergency. Crime is terrible in Chicago, just as it is in San Francisco, but the crime rates are going down. So for him to declare an emergency is a reason to do it. Some people see is not going to hold up legally. We'll see. There's a, this is something which people fear is the first step towards the president trying to take control of local law enforcement.
Thanks, as always. We appreciate you. That is KCBS political correspondent.
While all of this is going on with Trump's health and threats in Chicago and New Orleans and other places, the president has also removed the security for former Vice President Kamala Harris. Listen to what political insider Phil Mateer has to say on that subject.
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's, you know, vice presidents and former officials, short of the president, usually get 6 months protection after leaving office. Joe Biden extended that for Kamala Harris until next July, and President Trump terminated it. Okay, that caused a lot of a row around concern about the safety of the former vice president and California attorney general given these times. And so it appears that Governor Gavin Newsom is stepping in and saying she'll get California Highway Patrol protection going forward for an undisclosed amount of time. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass, where a former vice president lives in Los Angeles, says she will be extending protections to her as well with police. So it's like, not like she's going to be without protection, but given these times, it's certainly a precarious situation. One to think about is like, do the old rules apply or should we continue to give protection?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting because presumably, I mean, we don't know the details. It is Secret Service, of course, so you don't want to tip off the bad guys. But presumably there was a reason for extending the Secret Service. I mean, they do have intelligence after all.
Yeah, they do, Margie. And but there's a question about, but according to recent assessments reported by the Associated Press, the Secret Service didn't have a what they call, you know, a threat, a clear threat on the vice president. So that's one of the reasons why they terminated it. There wasn't one existing right now. Now, it's interesting because she's going to get protection. I mean, dignitary protection extends, you know, not just to presidents and vice presidents, you know, locality. She's going on a 17-city book tour for her new book. So she'll be getting protection there. But, you know, let's take, for example, former Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She is Speaker Emeritus now. She's not, and she was for years protected by the capital city, the Capitol Police, that guard the representatives when they're in Washington. And she is having that extended as well. She's still under Capitol protection, but that's not through the Secret Service. That's through the Capitol Police. So you get this, and that's because, you know, let's not forget her husband was attacked.
Paul Pelosi, of course. Yeah.
So there are some real threats out there that need to be dealt with. And, you know, San Francisco, for example, you know, we have dignitary protection out there for visiting diplomats. We always get visiting diplomats. You've been around when the motorcades have gone through the city, you know, police escorts for that. So they keep an eye on things. And as a matter of fact, I remember one time years ago, I was walking by the Opera House in San Francisco, which is right across the street from City Hall, and I heard this beautiful music coming from the open door of the Opera House in the back. And I went in, and there was this woman playing a cello on the stage. And I looked to my right, and there were two members of the San Francisco Police Department's Dignitary Protection Unit there. And I said, "Well, she must be really famous. Who's the cello player? What are you guys here to protect her?" That guy looks at me crossways and says, "We're not here to protect the player. We've been assigned to protect the cello."
Oh, my goodness.
Apparently, it was a museum piece that was irreplaceable. Like and had been traveling around the country in concert.
That's a great story. But on a more serious note, I just want to ask, doesn't this smack of revenge, this revocation of the detail?
Yes, it does. And does it also smack of largesse on the Biden's part, President Biden's part to extend it? Yes, I think on both cases. It stems, no matter what it stems of, the bottom line, it's petty. Okay, whether, you know, to not have her protected, it's just petty, and you don't want something happening. You know, the president himself was the target of two attempts on his life during the campaign alone, and we know how the country is right now, and I'm surprised, you know, they should possibly extend the protection for a year for the president and for the vice president when they leave office, given the times. But, like, I think, yeah, this is petty, but there's a solution, and you'll see it happen.
All right. Thanks as always. That is a Filmateer.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of On Deadline, written and produced by Christy Strauser and by me, Lauren Berry. Subscribe to On Deadline on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.